Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hey there, this is Gwendolyn H. Berry, and this is Here Be Monsters. I certainly hope you can hear me. We've had some technical difficulties today. I'm getting the chat room open. Dusty Taylor is, generally speaking, your host for Tuesdays, and hopefully Thursdays sometimes, too. I think she's a little bit pissed off at the moment, though. Can't help but be. Our Skype is not working right, so if you're out there listening, I hope you're patient. This is Here Be Monsters. We're part of a drumline of radio activists. We're on the air, and we're supporting Occupy in worldwide cities at this time. For as long as the good old world has Occupy, we'll be on every damn day. And we're sponsored by Roundtree7.com. It's a wonderful blog. The writers there are basically supporting this official boycott of the MSM media. And over at Roundtree 7, we try to bring knowledge to the social consciousness. We're reporting from the social nets and feeds, and we'll allow for any coverage that we can find pretty hard without any MSM to back us up right now, because just before coming on, I was asking Dusty if she had heard anything. Basically, I found on Facebook and Democracy Now! The news that the Oakland Police Department, about 200 of them, raided the Oakland encampment of Occupy Oakland and used rubber bullets and flash bombs to basically break the party up, I guess, is what they're thinking. When it gets down to having to use violence, then, you know, that's the system's game. That's the system's game. I think John Lennon actually said that. So right now we've got, as I said, technical difficulties. So if you'll hold by with me here, I will try to get up what I have collected for today's news. I'm typing in another way here. I can't actually play a clip and log out and then you log in, but you know, I've never actually tried it, so I don't know, Dusty. So why don't I try that? Why don't I begin playing a clip? You're going to have to hang up. I see you're in there. You're going to have to hang up because you'll have to call in to what do you call it, to clip in. So I'll give you a 3-minute interval with Gil Scott-Heron, and this is Gwendolyn H. Berry, and I'm signing out of here. But I'm not going off the air. Please, wait. For Gil Scott-Heron, Solution Hello.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox and Four Park without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading the charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the shape of a war theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Women Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor...
Hello, this is Dusty. Can anybody hear me? I have no freaking clue because I'm doing this a totally different way than I'm used to. Give me a fucking break. Okay, I'm going to try to do the show from a totally different way than I'm used to because Blog Talk Radio Skype wasn't working today. God bless those fucking morons. Let me see what I got here. So pissed right now. Let me see if I can play this.
You're gonna have to sing very loud.
We'll be right back.
Okay, that song wasn't coming in well at all, unless the people in the chat room can tell me. It was sounding garbled as hell for me on my end. Okay, good afternoon, 99ers and Occupy Wall Street supporters from around the globe. Hopefully a dear blogger buddy from Down Under will be able to call in today and give us his point of view on Occupy Wall Street and all the fuckery going on down in Melbourne and Sydney with their efforts and the subsequent arrests. Today's opening tune, which I think sounded like garbled and it was underwater, was a group called the Mekons, and their tune is named Abernat 8485. The song was written in support of the miners' strike in England back in 1984 and 85. They actually came out of retirement to cut the song, and the lyrics, Zombie and I felt, were quite relative to the Occupy Wall Street movement. I want to thank him for sending me that song, even though it didn't sound very clear or very good. I'm also going to read a post from Zombie that he has up later about the movement and why he supports it as a middle-class person who lives comfortably. And any and all links that I mention or talk about here on the show, of course, will be on my blog later on in the afternoon, leftwingnutjob.net. Everybody's logging in and out. I have no idea if anybody can hear me at this point because I'm using my friggin' cell phone. What I had originally planned on talking about right now was, a clip from Keith Olbermann's show last night. He interviewed one of the nurses in Chicago from the nurses' union that was one of the 170 that were arrested this past weekend when they refused to abandon their occupation of Grant Park. The nurses were not there as occupiers. They were there as medical providers providing care for the protesters. Here we go with Keith Olbermann's, where the hell is it? I'm sorry, it's just one of them days for me, folks. This is Keith talking to, where did it go? Here it is, the arrested nurse.
A different story entirely in Chicago. Police cracked down on Occupy protesters in Grant Park Sunday, arresting at least 130 of them. Among those arrested, two nurses from the National Nurses United Union, including its Midwest director, Jan Rodolfo, who joins us now from Chicago. Thank you for doing so.
Well, thank you for bringing the voice of nurses to the country, Keith.
Tell me the story. Why were you arrested, and how were you treated after you were arrested?
We set up a medical station in Grant Park. We had been there the week before and watched the arrests happen and felt that it was important that there be basic medical care available to protesters. And so we felt that it was necessary to be there, and nurses rallied to our cry to have nurses volunteer to come out and provide medical care.
And the arrest happened how?
The arrest happened when the 11 p.m. park curfew was reached. Police began making a final announcement that people had to clear the park, and made clear to us that that if we refused to remove the medical tent and take all the medical supplies out, that they would dismantle the tent and that there would be arrests. And we feel much like medics or mm-hmm. in a combat-type situation. That the moment where things get tense or where the danger increases or there's a possibility of arrests is really when we need to be there more than ever, where there's a possibility of people needing that medical care. So we were not willing to deny protesters the right to medical care.
So whatever you think of the protests personally, you weren't there mm-hmm. As a protester per se. You were there as a nurse, and so were your colleagues, correct?
Right. We were there as nurses, though we do support the Occupy movement and Occupy Chicago wholeheartedly, very inspired by them.
Do you plan to go back?
Absolutely. I think we feel a stronger resolve after this and really believe that Occupy Chicago and the Occupy movement represent the possibility of changing the whole narrative in the country. And actually, we believe that the 99% out there are suffering, and we see it all the time at the bedside as nurses.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this as the best chance to actually change that narrative.
You heard that Albany story with the attorney, district attorney of Albany County, who explained why no matter what the pressure might have been to make those arrests and such. It made no sense to him, and it seemed to be just a fundamental violation, not just of the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law. It seems that every time a community or a police department hasn't assessed things in that way, they've only managed to give more credibility and inspire more people to join this movement. Are you in the position almost of rooting for the police in Chicago to do the wrong thing and arrest everybody again?
No, but I really do think that the Occupy movement is galvanizing so many people out there who are suffering and have felt no hope up until now. They're suffering at home alone, feeling that it's their fault that they can't afford their student loans, or that they've lost their job, or they're facing a foreclosure. When the police crack down on protesters, I believe it does cause the whole country to rally in the defense of protesters.
As with Mayor Bloomberg in New York, Mayor Emanuel of Chicago has said, the city has, he used the term balancing act and has to enforce the law as well as respect people's First Amendment rights. I quoted him directly there. Do you think that your arrests and the other ones yesterday were balanced or showed respect for the First Amendment?
Absolutely not. Rahm Emanuel apparently believes that First Amendment rights end at 11 p.m. in the city of Chicago. We think that constitutional rights extend 24/7 and that people should have the right to protest and raise their voices and to reflect the anger and suffering that are out there across the country. Other mayors in Albany, as you mentioned, have figured out a way to do it, and it's time for Rahm Emanuel to let there be a long-term encampment in Chicago.
Jan Rodolfo, of the Registered Nurse and Midwest Director of National Nurses United, great. Thanks for your time.
Thanks.
In its rush.
I just realized I had a whole ton of dead air there. I'm sorry. I'm not used to working this from my cell phone. So everything I just read went into nowhere. What I was saying was, speaking of the number of arrests and First Amendment rights, ProPublica has a great read-up about the First Amendment and actually how it works when applied at the local level. I'm going to read part of that. The First Amendment is not absolute. Government can make reasonable stipulations about the time, place, and manner a peaceable protest can take place, as long as those restrictions are applied in a, and this is the important part, a content-neutral way. But what constitutes a reasonable time, place, and manner restriction? It depends on the context and circumstances, said Jeffrey Stone, a professor specializing in constitutional law at the University of Chicago. Things like noise, blockage of ordinary uses of the place, blockage of traffic, and destruction of property allow the government to regulate speakers. Stone gave a few examples of impeding ordinary usage. Those would be disturbing patients at a hospital, preventing students from going to school, or, more relevant to the Occupy movement, disrupting the flow of traffic for a long period of time. The majority of the Occupy Wall Street-related arrests have been on charges of disorderly conduct. Under the New York Penal Code, that includes making, quote-unquote, unreasonable noise, obstructing vehicular or pedestrian traffic, or congregating with other persons in a public place and refusing to comply with a lawful order of the police to disperse. Basically, the central question is the standard of reasonableness. You have to tolerate a certain amount of inconvenience in order to make room for First Amendment activity, but not so much that it disrupts things, Stone said. Individual states' unlawful assembly and disorderly conduct statutes have to fall in line with this standard. They can regulate it less if they want to, Stone said, but not more. And like I said, the important part is content neutrality. Time, place, and manner restrictions have to apply to similar types of protests equally, without regard for their message or point of view. Consider this year's 8-1 Supreme Court ruling that upheld an anti-gay minister's right to protest at military funerals. And we all know who that is. That's the Westboro Baptist wingnuts. He and a few members of his church would picket the funerals of service members killed in Iraq and Afghanistan, asserting that God hates America because of its tolerance for homosexuality. As Stone has explained, under the First Amendment, the government can't ban people from demonstrating because of the homophobic content of what they're saying at funerals, but they can set limits on how close to the funeral they can be or how loud they can be. So, you know... God bless those assholes at Westboro Baptist for asserting their First Amendment rights. They can do whatever they want except for getting close, you know, to the funerals, but Rahm Emanuel and his boys are, from what I've read at the Chicago Tribune, one of the reasons that Emanuel and his cops made all these arrests was they wanted to do a trial run for all the international summits that are coming there next year. So they used all the occupiers as guinea pigs. I'm going to read for the Chicago Tribune article. It says, with two international summits coming to Chicago in just 7 months, the city got a chance to conduct a trial run Sunday and arresting a large group of protesters without it escalating into violence. They were using them as guinea pigs. The problem is that it didn't go really smooth because Huffington Post has a good write-up about the jailed Occupy Chicago protesters describe harsh treatment by police, and they pretty much lay out exactly what kind of crap happened. They, for instance, say that 30 men were held in one room with no toilet paper for 30 hours. Arrestees also claim they were unable to make their one phone call for more than 16 hours. There's a long, the list goes on and on. So obviously the trial run for Emanuel and his cops didn't go too well. So hopefully they'll be able to fix that when they have those important summits coming to town within the next 7 months. The whole thing that drives me nuts is that they're, you know, the whole thing about Albany, in Albany, New York, the police officers there refused to arrest the protesters, even though the city council and the mayor were demanding that they do so. And Keith Olbermann also interviewed him, the Albany district attorney, last night. I was never able to get that piece uploaded to play, so I do apologize for that. Today's basically been a clusterfuck for me at this end. Like I said, I'm doing this on my cell phone, which I usually do on Skype, and Skype wasn't working on Blog Talk Radio this morning. There's the right to the First Amendment, but it's not an absolute right, and the government can fuck with you major, and if you don't like the way they mess with you, then you got to take them to court, and we all know how that's going to work out, because I'm sure most of those protesters don't have the money to take them to court for being arrested and waiting, you know, 30 hours without any toilet paper or 16 hours to make their phone call. And like I said, oh, we got a caller. I'm going to go ahead and take this call. Hello, caller. You're on the line. Hello?
Hi. Jesse?
Hi. Yes.
Yes. This is a vacuum slayer.
Hi, how you doing, VS?
Hi. Did it take you a minute to figure out who I was?
No, I'm on my cell phone, and it's just not working really well today. I usually use Skype and a headset, so I'm totally discombobulated today. When you said vacuum slayer, I knew exactly who you were.
Okay, I was actually listening to you on my cell phone, and when I heard that you were on your cell phone, I was like, oh, this isn't going to happen. I was like, oh, there's going to be technical difficulties. This is not going to happen. So, yay, I'm glad I got through.
Well, I'm just praying to God that I don't get dropped because my cell phone carrier sucks. I have AT&T, and it'll drop calls for no apparent reason, even though I'm sitting in the same fucking spot, you know? But,
yeah, I am on AT&T, too, so.
Yeah, God bless those assholes.
Hey, thank you so much for the reading last week. That was just, like, so cool hearing my words on the radio, I guess, or podcast. But I was like, oh, my God, I put so many F-bombs in that thing. And then it was like,
yeah,
one of those
that's
things
fine.
Where I was like,
that's because you were angry.
I was really angry, and it was one of those things where I was like getting angrier as I wrote it. And then when I heard you reading it, I was like, I was getting more embarrassed as I was like, you know,
no.
Her honeyed tones can only cover up so much. You know,
yeah, but you
like
know what? You know what?
More rage.
Yeah, but see, we don't have a problem with the F-bomb on Here Be Monsters. And and we actually think that it's you know, F-bombs are an exclamation point. It's part of our vocabulary. And I could have cleaned it up, but I didn't want to take away from the force of the article. I thought it was a very powerful article that you wrote. And so I didn't want to take anything away from it by trying to change up any of your F-bombs. And
right.
You know how I write, and I write like that, too. So, you know, I totally understand.
Right.
Gwen, whose show this is, doesn't have a problem with it. You know, it was a very powerful piece, and I left everything intact. So you should not be embarrassed by all your F-bombs, because all it did is it showed how angry you were with the situation and with everything that's going on in the world. It really was a beautiful piece. And then I'm actually going to read Zombie's accompanying piece later on this afternoon. You know, he did a really good piece too on it. And you guys, both of you are, you know, you are middle class. You guys are living comfortably. You're not, you know, living, you know, off the charts where you can take vacations every 6 months to Greece or to Paris or anything like that. But you live comfortably, and you have to watch your money. You know, and that's important, because those are the people that Occupy Wall Street are trying to speak to. Those are the people that they want to come on board and join them, because you guys, even though you're comfortable, you're still part of the 99%.
We technically are part of the 99%, absolutely. But, you know, I one of the reasons it was important for me to write that piece and call was because I feel like there's an effort by people on the right to say that if you're doing okay or if you're wealthy, that somehow that disqualifies you from speaking about issues that affect the poor or the middle class.
Oh, it does. Well, they're using anything they can to disqualify the entire movement. So, you know, you did a great job of debunking that bullshit. You know, and I think Zombie does too, you know, because you and I are familiar with it. That man spent a lot of time. He spent, 6 years in college to become an architect, you know, and yes, they're comfortable right now, but his business is grasping at straws because he's part of the construction industry, and that's the hardest hit industry in the United States, you know.
Exactly.
So, you know.
And I feel
just
like, you know, again, yeah, there's this effort now where they're like, well, fools, they got, you know, degrees in English and architecture and whatever, and they should have become, you know, engineers or whatever is in demand now, because apparently there are some, you know, white-collar jobs that are quite in demand now. But, I mean, I mean, I thought people went to school to learn, to broaden their horizons, to express themselves, you know, and to say that, you know, going to school for that particular reason is somehow ridiculous or stupid is, you know, I mean.
It's disgusting. No, they're grasping at straws. They're grasping at straws, and that's what's pathetic about them is they're using anything they can find to discredit anybody who supports the movement or the movement themselves, you know. There was a story this weekend about the drummers in New York City's occupation were pissed because the General Assembly wouldn't give them the money to replace their drums that were stolen. And I understand their frustration with that, but the New York occupation is, you know, they've got money, yes, but they have to spend it wisely because winter's coming on, and they're going to need an awful lot of stuff to keep them kids warm. And, you know, I call them kids only because I'm so fucking old, but they got to spend their money.
I wouldn't fit in at the drum circle either.
but I noticed that once one of those kids whined, and I shouldn't say whined, but one of those kids complained to a reporter for Associated Press, the whole thing went national about, they're having problems in the movement. Oh, they're having problems with each other. They're not giving the money out fairly. You know, the corporate media just glommed onto that shit, and Fox News just went batshit with it, you know, just painting the whole thing as, you know, they're being tyrants now, and you know, they're not giving the money to the people who need it. And I'm sure that, you know, if those guys, and they were bitching about the fact that there was paperwork, the drum guy was complaining that he had to fill out paperwork. He said, "We're part of the corporatocracy now. If we have to fill out paperwork, but you know, down the road, these guys might actually have to file taxes and file stuff with the IRS to show where they got their money and what they did with it. And so they're just, I think, they're just trying to cover their own ass with that. And I'm sorry that kid couldn't see past his own nose over the fact that he couldn't get his drum replaced. I think eventually they will replace those drums."
That's inane, and that's stupid, and that kid is an idiot. But, I mean, if you contrast that with the fact that, you know, there was a guy at some of the Tea Party rallies who had a booth who was selling T-shirts that said racist and proud. I mean, Fox News is happy to, you know, tell us all about the dirty hippies and how bad they smell and where they're having sex and da-da-da-da and their drum circles and stuff like that. And, you know, granted, okay, some of those people are probably, like, fucking retarded. You know, I really just don't give a shit about that. I really don't, you know?
No, because the press picks out the most vulnerable and the ones who look like they're the least informed. They pick out the worst members the group in order to paint the worst pictures that they can, you know? And that's something that we have to expect, you know? We have to expect the right and the extreme right to paint as ugly a picture as they can. And a lot of people are buying into that. I even find people on the left that are parroting some of the bullshit that's put out there about the group, saying, you know, I don't support it because, and then they lay out all these talking points that you can find.
They're a bunch of freaks and geeks and weirdos and drum circles and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, that doesn't make up the whole of the movement. And even if it did, I wouldn't particularly care. Because I think what their basic message is sound and worth listening to. And so, you know, you're right. It's all distract. And
it is.
You know, look over here. Look at this shiny thing. But it doesn't seem to be working, which frankly I'm relieved about.
Well, funny is there's been a shitload of polls now about how many people in the United States support the movement, and depending on how the polling company leans, you're getting different numbers. You know, I've seen a number as high as 56% of the population supports the movement, and then Pew.
Right.
Who I thought was a very reputable research outlet, came out last night and said that only 36% of the United States supports the movement. And I'm kind of like, whoa, because Pew's very respectable. They do a lot of really decent polling, and they do a lot. They have a whole section just on Hispanics and on immigration and everything. And I use a lot of their polling for research when I write articles. So when I saw that came out of Pew, I was like, well, shit, you know, what do you mean only 36%? How do we go from 56% with a CNN poll, who's become a teabagger nation channel, to Pew, who's a respected organization, saying only 36% support it? Polls are polls, and it's just, like I said, it depends on their methodology. It depends on how wide of a population that they get, and I just was kind of really freaked out about that. And I'm sure that the idiots at Fox News were just quoting the Pew poll like crazy yesterday, because it shows
sure
that only 36% are supporting it. But when I stood on the corner last weekend with our tiny little Occupy Bakersfield, we got a lot of honks, and I live in Redneckistan, so we were getting a lot of people driving by and honking and giving us high fives and thumbs up as they drove by, and that made us all feel really good. It was only maybe a dozen of us standing out there, but you know, hey, every little bit helps. And
it's encouraging. You know, you want to feel like you're not an island. And you know, I'm just jealous that you get to go out and do that. You know, I would give my left something to go out,
because
I know
there's.
Yeah. Now that he's happy, he's going through a phase where he's happy for maybe a total of 5 minutes at a time. As a matter of fact, I am playing with him right now, so he'll let me finish this conversation.
Well, I appreciate you calling in, and it was a beautiful piece. I really, really loved it. And reading
well, thank you for reading.
I really tried to give it the true inflection because I could feel the anger in the piece when I originally read it. It was just fantastic. So you keep up the good work because you are, you know, you're one of the great voices on the left, too, and you're a wonderful artist as well. I love your website, and I'll put another link to it up in the links for after the show because you do some beautiful artwork as well as being a very beautiful voice for the left. So thank you very much
for
calling in, sweetheart. And
no problem.
I hope you
I'm
continue
glad
to,
I worked up the courage.
I'm glad you did too. And Zombie's listening, so I'm sure he'll say something snarky to you on your blog later.
I'm sure he will.
All righty. Well, thank you, darling. I'll talk to you later then. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care, Dusty. Bye.
Okay. Now, we were speaking about Fox Noise and how they're spreading, you know, all the bullshit and the vile crap about anything and anything they can find. They tried to recently interview an Occupy Wall Street New York City protester, and the guy pretty much bitch slapped the hell out of the guy. The video, by the way, that they took of the interview never aired on Fox, but I'm going to go ahead and play his little interview because it was on YouTube, and it's basically he's pretty much ripping into the Fox reporter. It's 2 minutes and 39 seconds, so here it goes.
You know, certainly what was a lot of attention, if not police activity. I know over the weekend there was over 100 arrests, and you guys got things fired up. Are you taking your cues to the international movement? And how do you want to see this? If you could have it in a perfect way, how would it be?
Well, I don't know. It's really difficult to kind of answer questions leading to those conclusions. I'd say that we didn't take our cue off of anybody, really. It became a more spontaneous movement. As far as seeing this end, I would like to see it end. I would like to see the conversation continue. This is what we should have been talking about after 2008 when the economy collapsed. We basically patched a hole on the tire and said, yeah, let the car keep rolling. Unfortunately, it's fun to talk to the propaganda machine in the media, especially conservative media networks such as yourself, because we find that we can't get conversations on the Department of Justice's ongoing investigation of News Corporation, for which you are an employee, but we can certainly ask questions like, you know, why are the poor engaging in class warfare? Now, after 30 years of having our living standards decrease while the wealthiest 1% have had it better than ever, I think it's time for maybe, I don't know, some participation in our democracy that isn't funded by news cameras and gentlemen such as yourself.
Okay, but let me give you this challenge, Jesse.
Sure.
We're here giving you an opportunity on the record with Credit Ancestry to put any message you want out there, give you fair coverage, and I'm not going to in any way
be
biased about it. So there is an exception to the case because you wouldn't be able to get your message out without us, yeah?
No, certainly. I mean, take for instance when Glenn Beck was doing his protest and he called the president a person who hates white people and white culture. That was a low moment in America's history, and you guys kind of had a big part in it. So I'm glad to see you coming around and kind of paying attention with the other 99% of Americans are paying attention to, as opposed to the far-right fringe who would love to just destroy the middle class entirely.
All right, fair enough. You have a voice and important reason to criticize myself, my company, and anyone else. But let me ask you that. In fairness, does this administration or President Obama have any criticism as to the financial situation in the country?
I think myself, as well as many other people, would like to see a little bit more economic justice or social justice, Jesus stuff, as far as feeding the poor, health care for the sick. You know, I find it really entertaining that people like to hold the Bill of Rights up while they're screaming at gay soldiers, but they just can't wrap their heads around the idea that a for-profit health care system doesn't work. So let's just look at it like this. If we want the president to do more, let's talk to him on a level that actually reaches people, instead of asking for his birth certificate and wasting time with total nonsense like philanthropy.
Okay, that was it. And we have a caller. Hold on. Caller from area code 646, you're on the air.
Hello?
Dusty, yes, Dusty. AK,
yep.
How you doing, darling?
I'm fine. How are you? Not having a great day from the sound of it.
No, I'm not having a good day. I'm having a shit test day, as a matter of fact, because I hate using my cell phone to call in. Oh, I'm coming across loud and clear. That's good. Tell us what's going on down there in Melbourne and Sydney.
Well, Melbourne seems to have had some action from the police there and cleared most of the people out.
Sydney seems to
be quiet. I can't see anything going on there. But the thing with Melbourne is that they have got a conservative government for the state of Victoria now, and the Queen of England is visiting them. And so it wouldn't be nice to have the Queen have to go past people who aren't happy.
Yes, they don't want her walking past a bunch of dirty hippies.
Oh, shouting stuff and that. Yeah.
Well, if they cleared out Melbourne, are those guys coming back?
A small group of them did come back. Yeah,
good.
Very small, like, you know, half a dozen people. I haven't heard anything from them going on this morning or anything. It's just so typical of conservative governments in Australia that they wouldn't want to take the chance of the Queen seeing anything real.
Well, you live in New Zealand. You don't live in Australia. I should make sure I mention that.
Well done.
I confuse it. Yes, I confuse it too. So compared to Australia, what type of government do you have? Is it centrist? Is it left? Is it to the right?
In New Zealand? Yeah, it's pretty hard right wing.
Oh, it is hard right wing?
Yeah, they call themselves centrist, but, I mean, they do the usual conservative things. They're trying to cut education, and they're constantly trying to cut health stuff and, just usual right-wing stuff.
Yeah, the stuff they do here in the States. When they say that they have to tighten their belt, they screw with everybody that's poor or elderly or sick.
Yeah,
or
yeah,
education,
it's funny.
Yeah.
You never hear them. Yeah, and there's... We've got our election is next month, and so part of the rules of that is that the government accounts have to be published, and that happened yesterday. And it's going to be terrible. Every time they say this, you know, we're going to have to cut. And funnily enough, they never mention putting corporate taxes up or anything like that. You know, it's all. You dumb poor people are really going to have to suffer.
Yeah, you dumb poor bastards. You don't bring any money into our federal coffers, so we're going to cut your benefits.
That's right. And that'll save us, $1 million probably.
Yeah, it's a whole million when you've got a budget of billions. Yes, it's a drop in the proverbial bucket is what it is. And since that voting block doesn't vote consistently and it's not a real huge voting block, they don't really care if those guys get pissed off anyway.
Yeah, and we have the history here of nobody will be my master. You know, everybody's equal.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's part of our mythology. And so when you would try to explain to anybody that, you know, there is actually a ruling class, they would say, oh, no. And so, yeah, it works against any sort of collaboration.
Well, do you guys have the type of government where there's representatives from each little group? Like, even if there's just one guy who represents a poor district, at least he has a voice in your Congress or your legislature? And so they
have
to build coalitions?
Well, yeah, we have a parliament. Because we're so small, states and provinces and things like that just wouldn't really, you know, wouldn't be worth it. So you have an MP from your district or town or city. And about 10 years ago, or I think it's 12 years ago now, we changed to a system called MMP, which is proportional representation. And interestingly enough, it was opposed by big business who didn't want to have a whole lot of, yeah.
Well, if they oppose it, then you know it should be good.
Exactly. And it's the referendum on it, on how MMP is working, is coming up in this election. When you vote for your MP and stuff, there will also be a vote, do you want to keep MMP? And once again, the same people are coming out and saying, oh, it's been so bad. Look, our parliament is full of Maori people and women and gay people are in parliament too. Look at this terribleness.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
It's really
look
interesting.
Look how horrible.
But sad. Yeah. Well, but it's all code,
Well, doesn't it force the people in the center and the people on the right to actually talk to each other and build coalitions of common ground? That's how it's supposed to work, isn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, this is New Zealand. When you say left here, you really probably mean one atom left. There are coalitions, but usually the people in the coalitions are pretty much on the same side anyway. They would be on the same side anyway, even if they weren't in a formal coalition.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to let another caller come in and talk because I think this might be Mr. Buffon. Hold on a minute. Is this Mr. B?
Yeah, it is. What up?
Hi.
Whoa.
It's the three of us now, so you got anything you want to talk to Kiwi about?
He sounds funny. What's the matter with
him? He sounds funny. Oh, get over it.
What did he say?
He doesn't talk normal like we do.
That's because he's way far away from us there. Mr. Kiwi.
I have a more refined exit.
Yes, you do, dear. As far as how do you look at the Occupy Wall Street? I mean, I'd like your perspective from down there, since you live under a repressive regime as well. You know, it's pretty conservative. You know, do you think that this movement will resonate globally? Do you think it's got a snowball's chance in hell of staying current and staying important?
I think there is a definite feeling in the world that something is not right, and the financial part of it has been, part of the reason for that not being right. And I've got to say that one of the things that made me realise it was reading Matt Taibbi's Griftopia book. Have you read that?
Oh, yes. Taibbi's got some great... That's a great book. It really is. And I read all his pieces that he does in the Rolling Stone. He really hits the nail on the head.
Doesn't he, though? And scary as all hell, you know. But, yeah, I think that there will be... I don't know. You know, maybe not like 1968, there was a sort of a coming together of this sort of thing all around the world, and... in the same way as it is now, the young people were at the front of it. But it will probably end up being co-opted, you know, as
well,
they
that's what they're fighting hard not to do. They're not even letting most of the politicians speak, which is great. Groups like Move On and Center for American Progress have attempted to move in and co-opt, and they're pretty much keeping those guys at bay. So I think they learned some lessons from the idiots on the Tea Party side. That's your downfall if you let a big major group co-opt you. So I'm hoping that that's something that they did at least learn from the Teabagger Nation, is don't let anybody co-opt your movement, because that's a straight shot to hell if you let that crap happen.
To ask a question of you, our news media is a bit obsessed by other things at the moment, so the OWS is not getting a lot of coverage. But with you people, how is it comparing the amount of coverage that OWS gets compared with the saturation that the Tea Party got?
Why don't you answer that, Mr. Buffon?
Well, you got me, because I don't consume much mainstream media. I just look at crap on the internet. So, I mean, I think as far as the national news goes, you know, the broadcast networks that apparently are watched only by people who are interested in boner pills and false truth preparations. I don't think Occupy Wall Street has been covered as much as the Tea Party, and there's just a general prejudice in these United States that, you know, teabaggers are legitimate because they're old and white, and these are just a bunch of young, spoiled hippies. You know, the Occupy movement are young, spoiled hippies, and why in God's name are they beating on these drums all the time? What good is that going to do? Which I'm inclined to agree with, at least as far as the drum beating goes. But,
well, the funny part is hurting lefties is like hurting, you know, cats. You just can't do it. You're going to have a million factions for, you know, for every five people that are, you know, that are going to show up. So, you know, trying to keep all those people in line, so to speak, isn't going to happen. That's why their list of grievances is so long. And, you know, that's how I view that point of view is, you know, there's always going to be, even marches I attended during George Bush's reign in your area down there in Los Angeles, you've got every kind of whack job available that would show up with their posters and their funny garb and, you know, talking about how, you know, 9/11 was an inside job or, you know, George Bush is the devil and the whole nine yards, you know. George Bush wasn't the devil, Karl Rove was, but that's another story. But as far as the mainstream news here, they spend very little time on it, and if they can find a negative story, they will run with that, Mr. Kiwi, more than anything. If they can find something negative that will resonate and tear down the movement, then they will pretty much report on that every time. I gave the example earlier of the drummers had a bunch of their drums stolen in New York City, and they were upset because the New York General Assembly wouldn't give them the money to replace those drums. So they started complaining to the press about it, and that went national within a matter of less than 24 hours. Every national media outlet had an article written about it, and the whole twist was that the General Assembly, they were tyrants and dictators, and they weren't sharing the wealth. So that, you know, I'm sure nothing's further from the truth. And the other thing is that people are bitching that if they want something, they have to fill out paperwork. And the press thinks that's horrible, too. That means, oh, my God, they're part of the corporatocracy because they're actually requiring paperwork. You know, whereas, you know, I think that should be expected. These guys have got a lot of money on hand, and they might eventually have to account to it to the IRS. So if you've got to account to it to the IRS, you got to tell them what came in and what went out and where it went. So, you know, the media doesn't back up anything, or they don't qualify anything. They just sit there and tell you that, you know, that everything is not running as smooth as OWS would have you believe.
Did these people have hashtags on their shoulders, Dusty, though?
I have no idea, dear. Yes, the hashtag is an interesting thing. You know, the whole for me, the most important thing now is how law enforcement in the various areas are dealing with the protesters, and the one thing I'm going to play later and talk about more is how in Albany, New York, the capital of the state of New York. The law enforcement there actually refused to go in and arrest the protesters. They said, sorry, we're not going to do it. And I thought that was a great move on their part.
That's the sort of thing that will get real things happening, because it's drawing a long bow. But one of the things that helped the Egyptian people was the army and the police saying they wouldn't do anything about it. So
yeah,
once you can
exactly.
Get that sort of thing happening, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to say, too, when I say our government is hard right-wing, it's not like some sort of, as you said, repressive regime. They aren't that well organized. They're not
well organized.
They're just sort of, just you'd imagine like businessmen, you know, that's what they model themselves on. If we had a corporate government, that would be it. Although apparently there has been some, there are some stories starting to come out of the rebuilding of Christchurch that hint at maybe some bad stuff going on down there. But usually we don't have the same obsession that you have with abortion and guns and God knows what else, whether our Prime Minister was born here or not.
So you guys don't worry about the social issues, which is what our GOP and the Republicans try to push more than anything here, is they try to keep the social issues up front because that appeals to their whack job base.
No, it's not quite as strong here, although any newspaper that writes about abortion or anything like that will have a huge amount of letters suddenly from it. So, but it just doesn't come out in the mainstream. I'm not too sure why. Perhaps we're not interested. I think the ruling thing in New Zealand is lethargy.
The other thing that I've noticed about the police that go in and they start arresting everybody is that the mainstream media does pick up on that, and they will broadcast that, and I think it helps build the movement. It doesn't tear it down. It helps build it. One of the clips I'm going to play in a little bit is where Keith Olbermann talks to an author about when they arrested the 700 people on the Brooklyn Bridge and how that was they led them out there. This is the way the story goes by the people who were there. The police led them out there, and then when they got them so far out, they surrounded them, and then they started arbitrarily arresting various members. And there's actually a class action lawsuit against the New York Police Department saying that they were coerced into going onto the bridge by the cops and thereby arrested afterwards. So that'll be interesting to see how that lawsuit works out. But Keith Olbermann, like I said, I'm going to play that clip in a little bit where he talks to an author about the significance of the Brooklyn Bridge incident and how once that happened, that's when the media, all the mainstream media started paying attention, and that's when people really started building the movements both nationwide and internationally. It really seemed to galvanize people, you know, that it wasn't right and that it was total bullshit. So,
Mr. Buffon, you're usually a supporter of law and order. What do you think about that?
Who, me? Law and order? not quite.
No. He loved the anarchists over in the UK. He thought they were great.
Yeah, I'm a nihilist. I'm perfectly in favor of destroying everything and killing all the stupid people, frankly. And I'll be the one who decides who's stupid. But
see, I believe in political nihilism too. I think that we're at the point where it has to be totally in the crapper for everybody to wake up and realize that they have to vote everybody out and start over again. I really do. I think as long as it just kind of keeps sitting around the way it is right now and things get bad, but then they get a little better, then they get bad again, as long as nothing goes all the way into the total crapper, nobody's ever going to rise up and say, hey, this is bullshit, we got to fix it, you know? I'm a political nihilist in that respect a lot. I'm also a socialist, but hey, what the hell? But anyway, gents, my back is killing me because I've been stressed out all day today. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play that clip with Keith Olbermann where he talks to the author about the significance of the Brooklyn Bridge arrest. And then I'm probably going to sign out because I've just had a really lousy day today. And I thank you for calling in, AK. I'm going to tout your blog on as one of the links. And Mr. B, I love you to death for calling in lately. You call in every week. I love you for that. And you're my favorite get off my lawn guy from LA. So I adore you, sweetheart, and I'm glad you call in. So
lawn would be full of mines, wouldn't it?
It probably is full of mines. Who knows with him?
Okay, it's been lovely to talk to you.
Good to hear your voice, too.
Yes, it's good to hear all our voices. And it's funny, I wrote a piece last night about a new bill where they're trying to change the gun laws for concealed weapons here, and Buffon came on my blog post and said, I take back everything I've ever said mean about you because I noted in my post that I've owned a handgun since I was an adult, and I've grown up with guns, and I'm not afraid to use one. So I think I scared the piss out of Buffon. So
not that I would ever shoot him.
Not that I would ever shoot him.
Let me just say that I spent 12 days in a mental hospital after I threatened someone with a gun, but they took it away. So, however, I'm now at the point where I think I can buy one again. So watch out.
You think you can buy one again? Well, and that's what my whole piece is about, too.
Let me ask you about styles.
I haven't done anything.
Okay, well, go out and get yourself a gun, sweetie, because according to the NRA, they're going to take all our rights away and we'll never be able to own one again. So everybody needs to go out and buy a gun at Walmart.
Or two.
Stock up.
Bye-bye.
It's great to talk to you. Thank you, AK, for calling in, honey. I really appreciate it.
Thank you,
Mr. Buffon. Thank you, Buffon.
My pleasure, not that I have anything better to do.
Even after the pepper spraying of four defenseless women in downtown New York on September 24th, Occupy Wall Street did not come to the forefront of discussion until October 1st. That's when New York police arrested 700 protesters who they seem to have baited into an off-limits area of the Brooklyn Bridge. In our third story on Countdown, four women sprayed is a viral video. 700 people arrested is a national television news story and worthy of a name. And 23 days later, an e-book, The Battle of the Brooklyn Bridge. Author Will Bunch joins me in a second. If police thought the crackdown would stifle the protests, they badly miscalculated. The scene on the bridge helped to elevate what had been, to some degree, an idiosyncratic local affair into a national and global movement. Let's bring in Will Bunch, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News and author of October 1st, 2011, The Battle of the Brooklyn Bridge. Good evening, Will.
Hey, Keith. Boy, things have really changed for Occupy Wall Street since the first time we talked, haven't they?
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit, yeah.
I want to get to the e-book or the Kindle single or whatever, however you're calling
right,
it.
Yeah.
It's 99 cents and you get some of the money. I'll get to that in a minute. But 23 days later, do you think you already have a sense of where this event fits historically?
Well, absolutely. It was a turning point. I mean, as you said, I mean, it was the pepper spray video was getting some attention. But when 700 people got arrested, it was too big to ignore. You know, it's interesting listening to the first half of the show. I mean, you really set up some of the themes of the book, the way that the police in Albany have kind of learned from the mistakes that the NYPD made on the bridge that day. I mean, you know, the NYPD thought they could break the protest, essentially, by holding people sitting there high atop the bridge for 4 or 5 hours and then sending them to jails across the city. They thought people wouldn't go back and protest. Instead, this like electrified the whole nation. This is where you saw Occupy Boise and Occupy Duluth and all these groups around the country sprang up after the, you know, kind of electrifying news about what happened on October 1st.
All right,
2011.
So, well, your point about the Albany arrest, obviously, or non-arrest, is I think tremendously significant. But from the New York point of view, even after Brooklyn Bridge, they'd already screwed up on the pepper spray, both pepper spray incidents. They'd screwed up on everything, basically, except the day they were going to shut down the medical tent and Jesse Jackson joined them locking arms, and then they went, okay, we're backing off. Have they still not learned that they are, as much as the cause itself, the amplifiers of the Occupy movement in New York, the police department in New York, have they not learned that yet?
No, I don't think they've learned at all. And, you know, this is something that goes back to the protests of the 1960s. They called it heightening the contradictions. And basically the police have come to stand as a symbol of everything the protesters are against. I mean, the police have become kind of a stand-in for the 1% and the elites that they seem to be protecting. And, you know, they've given the protesters a powerful symbol. And I think a visible, tangible symbol that people can react visually to. People reacted very viscerally to the pepper spray, and then they reacted to what they saw on the bridge.
Tell me about what you've written. What are you providing that the readers would not know already from radio or television or magazines or blogs or YouTube or tweets or maybe even being there?
Well, the one thing that's really important, and the reason why I really wanted to write this ebook, is because I don't think people across America were getting a really good picture of who these protesters are. You know, we've seen, like you said earlier in the show, the right wing trying to define these protesters either as dirty, smelly hippies or having some ties to the Nazis or Sharia law or all these crazy things, mm-hmm. when the truth is these are, in NPR speak, people like you. They're everyday people. You know, the first wave of protesters who took to the streets on September 17th, yes, I mean, these people were kind of idealistic revolutionary dreamers to some point, and those people are going to be the vanguard of something like this. But, you know, after the first week or two, the people who were coming out were everyday people who saw this as a vessel to voice their frustrations. And so the book introduces you to some of these people, like Jack Smith, a retired lawyer mm-hmm. who's, you know, wanted to do something for social justice, or Eric Hart, the assistant props manager at the Public Theater in New York, mm-hmm. who was taking part in his first protest and found himself, you know, in a holding cell in a precinct in Brooklyn. And, you know, all of these people, Keith, once they got arrested, nobody was dissuaded from the movement. In fact, people's passions for this movement, for Occupy Wall Street, burned much brighter after they were arrested. It was just a major, you know, miscalculation screw-up by the NYPD.
All right, take 30 seconds and explain to the audience how they buy it.
Well, you go to Amazon.com. They're called Kindle Singles. They're Kindle books. They're shorter than a conventional book, but longer than a magazine article. This one's 14,000 words. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's 99 cents. And I priced it that way because I wanted the 99 percenters to be able to afford a book at 99 cents. And you can get Kindle apps for a regular PC or a Mac. You can read it on a Mac. You can read it on a smartphone. You can read it on an iPad. You don't have to have a Kindle device. Anybody can download a different application for Kindle, and they can read this book.
Excellent. Good work. Will Bunch, Hackley 77, author of the new AEC.
Yay. So that was Keith Overman interviewing Will Bunch. It sounded like a good little ebook because I personally believe that that was a galvanizing moment for the entire movement. Damn it, Buffon dropped his call, so he probably got tired of being on hold. But anyway, I'm going to go ahead and close the show with Zombie's piece, which I really, really enjoyed. It's along the lines of Vacuum Slayer's post, which I read last week. The piece is entitled Afar and Forlorn. Here we go. It says, Vacuum Slayer has an awesome post up, some fine writing, and I take back all the snark about her typos I have written. Well, until the next time she makes some funny misspellings, but damn, those are tasty and hard to resist. Anyway, but I am also part of the 99%, and like VS says, we are doing okay. Almost entirely because Wife Sublime works for a planet-killing multinational corporation that pays zero taxes, which makes me somewhat conflicted. I once had such dreams, such hopes. While I started college as a baby engineer, very quickly I discovered it was not my thing, and through happenstance found myself taking to a Madison architect. What he told me was, okay, there aren't any jobs, but being an architect is a good career. He was right. I got a job with a decent local firm with a specialty in adaptive reuse and was slotted in as a designer. After a rough shakedown period with the psycho bigot Nazi boss, I found my legs and designed some great things for my city. He's got some pictures up that are really nice. And some mediocre things, as one must pay the bills. Eventually, several of us split off. And since architects are completely without ego issues, I'm sure he said that with tongue in cheek, the three of us couldn't work together. Fuck. I don't need to get off into a digression here, but what I want to say is that I have designed things all over this fair city and have won several awards for my work, both for the Nazi sumbitch and on my own. And after 8 years of Republican governance and hideous malpractice by our financial masters, I found that my career was stagnant. I laid off my last couple of folks, reviewed my debt load, considered the rope, and made contacts with people in the industry. Yeah, right. Everybody was laying off, not hiring, especially not an older guy with tons of experience. I had friends who have been seeing year over year 10% salary reductions, massive layoffs, and in one particular case, a 50% reduction in salary. And if I didn't have that business debt, it would be fucking funny. Okay, maybe not so much. There used to be a cliche in the business that an architect's career doesn't start until he's 40. Well, here I am, and it appears that my career will be ending at 50. Yeah, we're doing okay, but mainly because my wife is better at making life choices than I am. Our house is paid off, our son is nearly 17, and hasn't gotten anyone pregnant. The dog has stopped farting for the most part. Yeah, I got an iPhone and an iPad, and yeah, my laughable business pays for them, for now. We are not in danger of foreclosure or missing meals or having our cars repossessed. I fully recognize that there are millions more people not as fortunate, and that's the issue, isn't it? Much of the design work I have done in the past few years have been financed through Title 42 and, to some extent, historic preservation tax credits. Part of that is requirement that the residential provided be rented to working folks within a certain age and with the maximum rent, and where the maximum rent is also controlled to make it affordable for them. It's an effective program, a public/private effort. Yesterday we had a ribbon cutting for the project, and this one, for those paying attention, he's got a nice picture of it. At the ceremony, one of the tenants spoke. It's not the first time that a tenant has spoken at one of these dedication events. Christ, I lost my place. Hold on. Oh, Jesus. It's not the first time that a tenant has spoken at one of these dedication events. And when they do, I am reminded that however much my career is sucking wind, it still is contributing to making the lives of the 99% better. In a better America, we would be doing projects like this as a matter of course. We would be building things that benefit our citizens at every turn, new housing, new schools, new infill projects, new infrastructure, not new wars. Yeah, in a better America. Well, we're doing okay, and my constant whining about my career is maybe not the most overwhelming part of the OWS protests. My crappy little operation doesn't matter, live or die. But for good or ill, my career has been oriented towards low to middle-class urban dwellers, and those seem to be dying out, due almost entirely to the arrogance and malfeasance of the financial institutions and malfeasance and corporate knob-gobbling of our democratic, quote-unquote, institutions. But I know how to repair our urban environments. I know how to make the suburbs work better. My work has, without fail, improved its communities. I always wanted to use my talents and training to improve our built environment, in particular with urban infill projects, but also raising the bar for suburban and ex-urban development, and I have to some extent. But it seems these opportunities are dwindling, never to return, and the blame lays squarely against those fuckers on Wall Street, drinking their champagne on the streets above the protesters, or the ones in Chicago with their fucking window signs. Yes, you, the 1% and the masters of the universe. But we are coming for you. We are the 99%. And between myself and a few other people, we know how to bring your buildings down. And he has a video up. It's called, it's an implosion video. And then his final line is, you fuckers should have jumped. We are the 99%. And that is from my dear friend Zombie, whose blog is empireofthesenseless.wordpress.com. I really liked his piece. I thought it was pretty good because he is making it through life. He's just not sailing through it, you know, but he's not even bitching about that, you know, and he's out there to do good things, whereas the bankers are just there to make a buck, and they don't give a shit who they take down when they make it. Anyhow, folks, that is today's show. I went a lot longer than I thought I would. I know there was a lot of dead air and a lot of screw-ups. I do apologize for that. Hopefully I'll figure out what the hell's wrong with my Skype connection or my headphones. I don't know what the hell which one it is. But in any case, any and all links to everything that was brought up on today's show and stuff that I probably freaking forgot, I'll put on there anyway at my blog, leftwingnutjob.net. And this show, Here Be Monsters, which is hosted by Gwen Berry, is on every day at the same time during the week. It's on at 4 p.m., which is 1 p.m. left coast time. I sit in for her on Tuesdays. Usually it goes a lot smoother than today. So We're also brought to you by Roundtree7.com. It's the number 7. Gwen and I are both writers at that site. I hope you check it out. We have some very incredibly intelligent and understanding writers there. I'm doing a lot of ums now. I can hear myself. So I hope you guys check out Roundtree7.com, and I hope you'll come back and listen to Gwen. And she does have some different people sit in for her occasionally, because we are doing this Occupy Wall Street support movement every day as long as they're there. So give Gwen some props for that, because it sure as hell can't be easy getting online and getting on the radio show every day and trying to figure out what she's going to talk about so that everybody who logs in doesn't log out. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and take us out with, let me see, what should I play to end this thing? Let's see. I always play my Ry Cooder song. I don't know if that pisses people off or not. So I'm going to play Ry Cooder again. And Ry Cooder's going to take us out tonight. Where are you, Ry? Come on, this is just not my friggin' day. I can't find my Ry Cooder song. Oh, there it is. Here it is. It's Ry Cooder playing No Banker Left Behind. Good night and good luck.
My telephone rang one evening. My buddy called for me. Said the bankers all are leaving. You better come round and see. It starts in Revelation. They robbed the nation blind. They're all down at the station. No banker left behind. No banker, no banker, no banker could I find. They were all down at the station. No banker left behind. Well, the bankers called a meeting. To the White House they went one day. They was going to call on the president in a quiet and a sociable way. And the afternoon was sunny, and the weather, it was fine. They counted out our money, and no banker was left behind. No banker, no banker, no banker could I find. They were all down at the White House. No banker was left behind. The conductor's calling all aboard. We'll be leaving soon with champagne and shrimp cocktails. And that's not all you find. There's $1 billion bonus and no banker left behind. No banker.